very significant topics of discussion, and perhaps we can get yourself, Rashmi Prabhu, if you'd like to kindly read for us on the bottom of page 3, where it actually describes these things from the above statement. It's about sort of halfway down the text.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
In the above statement by Kapila Dev from Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual position of a pure devotee is described, and the primary characteristics of devotional service are also defined. Further characteristics of devotional service are described by Rupa Goswami with evidences from different scriptures. He states, there are six characteristics of pure devotional service which are as follows. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved. Those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even him. This means that pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna himself, because it is Krishna's internal potency.
Mm, thank you. So we've discussed these first five. This is a very important chapter because it gives us the grounding, the foundation of understanding the characteristics of devotional service, because this book is actually the science of devotional service, the science of bhakti yoga. So we read the section, Krishna consciousness is all auspicious, and that about the happiness in Krishna consciousness and the rareness of pure devotional service and the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. And so now on the bottom of page 15, Meera Prabhu, if you could please read for us the... Oh, you've got a sore throat too. Okay, so we have a debilitated audience. Okay, so Jayananda Prabhu, if you could nicely read for us, please, the first paragraph of Attracting Krishna. This is the sixth of the primary characteristics of pure devotional service.
Okay. Attracting Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that devotional service attracts even Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone, but devotional service attracts Krishna. The symbol of devotional service is the highest degree, is Radharani. Krishna is called Madan Mohan, which means that he is so attractive that he can defeat the attraction of thousands of cupids. Radharani is called more attractive, for she can even attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call her Madan Mohan Mohini.
Mohani.
Mohani. The attractor of the attractor of Cupid. Mm. To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani. The devotees in Vrindavan put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. In Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the Mahatmas, or great souls, are under the protection of Devi Prakriti, the internal energy, Radharani. So, being directly under the control of internal potency of Krishna, devotional service attracts even Krishna himself.
Okay, good. So, any questions or comments on this so far? Okay. Anyone else got any questions or comments? No? Okay.
The devotional service, you know, is the internal potency of Radharani, is the internal potency of Krishna, and it's controlled by Radharani.
Yes. Actually, and she is herself the symbol of devotional service in the highest degree. So we can understand that, perhaps we can understand that what qualification have we got to attract Krishna? why should Krishna be attracted to us? After all, even if we accept that we're, even if we become pure devotees of Krishna, still what can we do to attract Krishna? Even if we become situated in the spiritual sky, in our eternal constitutional position as jivas, what can we do to attract Krishna? And what to speak of here in this material world, where we have no interest in Krishna in this material world, what can the living entities do that will attract Krishna? What is the possibility of our attracting Krishna's attention? Just like supposing, even in this mundane world, supposing you want to go and attract the attention of the Prime Minister of Italy. Sometimes people adopt different means to attract his attention. They come and slug him in the face with a statue of some big cathedral or other and break part of his face. But that's not a particularly good way to attract his attention. This is something that the demons do to attract Krishna. They try to attack Krishna and try to kill Krishna. But as far as the devotees, if they want to attract Krishna's attention and get his mercy, of course someone who attacks Krishna, he gets the mercy that he may get killed by Krishna. But if we want to attract Krishna's mercy in a pleasant way, in a way that will please Krishna, and he will be favorably inclined towards us, then what is it that's required to attract Krishna's attention?
To please Radha Radhika, or by doing some service?
Yes, actually devotional service specifically. We have to perform devotional service to Krishna, because this is the only thing we can do in this whole material world that attracts Krishna. Because devotional service has actually got nothing whatsoever to do with this material world. It's not under the control of the three modes of material nature. Whereas everything and everyone in this world is totally controlled by these three modes: goodness, passion and ignorance. But devotional service is not a manifestation of the three modes of material nature. Every other activity we do, as we read in Bhagavad Gita, in the different chapters leading up to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, is either inspired by goodness or passion or ignorance or a combination of these three, by some dirty things that are covering the heart. I was listening today to a lecture. Prabhupada was explaining that the mode of goodness, of course the mode of goodness is not dirty, but and the mode of passion and ignorance are dirty, but the mode of goodness in this world is always mixed with the mode of passion and ignorance, so therefore it's dirty. But pure goodness, pure Krishna consciousness is clean. Actually, this is the process of cleansing the heart. The pure condition of the living entity is purified goodness, actually pure goodness, where he's not mixed with the modes of passion and ignorance, because the mode of goodness is always mixed in this world with goodness and passion, ignorance and passion. But the pure devotee is situated on the platform of pure goodness. There is no passionate intention or ignorant intention in the devotee's heart for his activities. And his only concern is actually devotional service. And devotional service is what attracts Krishna. Now you may recall reading in the Krishna book how when Krishna was in the chapter, the introduction to the Rasa dance, when Krishna was calling the gopis with his transcendental flute, he's playing his flute very nicely, and the gopis, hearing the calling of Krishna's flute, they left whatever they were doing, whether they were dressing, whether they were bathing, whether they were feeding their children, whether they were feeding their husbands, whether they were decorating themselves, whether they were cooking, or whatever they were doing, they just got up and left and went to go and see Krishna in their eagerness to see Krishna. But what was their eagerness? Their eagerness was to go and please Krishna. Actually, that was their eagerness. And so they went to see Krishna In the dead of night, Krishna was 8 years old, actually. In Vrindavan forest, people accused Krishna of so many things. But actually he was 8 years old at that time. He lifted Govardhan Hill at the age of 7, and then the Rasa dance took place in Krishna's 8th year. So what happened was that the gopis, they became very much discouraged at first by Krishna, because he gave them all sorts of very good instructions. He told them to return home and remain as very chaste ladies. And there was no need, he said, for them to come and stand near him. They could go home and simply think of Krishna and talk about him. But they told Krishna, "Well, we're really sorry, Krishna, but our legs have no power to move. We can't move even if we wanted to." Anyway, so after some time there was nice discussion, and the gopis, they were... Because Krishna, he did the gopis a wonderful favor. Normally we know that Krishna is in the heart of every living being. But with the gopis, he actually expanded himself outside, and he was personally expanded between each two gopis. And in this way, they were performing very nice pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan. But then the gopis, they became very proud. They became a little proud, rather, of the fact that actually they were the most fortunate women in the whole universe. And Krishna, of course, he could detect that they'd become a little proud, and so he disappeared. And they were left crying and crying and crying for Krishna. They became so mad in their separation, feelings of separation from Krishna, that they started imitating the pastimes of Krishna. And in their madness, they were even declaring to each other, "Look, I am Krishna, just see." And then one was lifting up her cloth and saying, "Just see, I'm lifting Govardhan Hill. Don't be afraid and think that the hill will fall from my hand." And they were, could only be satisfied by being completely absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. And another would chastise Putana and say, "You rascal Putana," or "You rascal Kaliya, get out of this lake, you leave here immediately." They were just imitating the pastimes of Krishna, being totally, fully absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. They couldn't think of anything else. And in this way, by their lamentation, they became somewhat purified. But Krishna, however, they came across Krishna's footprints, and there they were very shocked and surprised to see that Krishna's footprints were there with another pair of footprints. And this is actually the first time Radharani's name is mentioned in the Krishna book, because they were actually seeing that Krishna must have gone off with some other gopi, some exceptionally qualified and beautiful gopi. And in this way they could understand that, look, just see, there are the marks in the footprint. Here we see only half a footprint. This must be where Krishna reached up and picked some flowers from the tree to set in Radharani's hair. You know, so they were discussing what was happening, and they actually became a little envious of Radharani, because they're thinking that how could Krishna be enjoying her company and he's left aside all of us? So they're thinking like this. And then they could understand that here there was only one set of footprints. And they were thinking to themselves, this must be because Radharani, because they started, you know, becoming a little envious, so they were discussing what they considered was Radharani's faults. And they were saying that she must have said to Krishna that, "Oh, I'm feeling a little tired, why don't you just carry me on your shoulders?" And Krishna must have said, "All right, just climb on my shoulders," and then disappeared, and leaving Radharani there to lament. So at that point they became non-envious. They became sympathetic towards Radharani and her plight. And Prabhupada explains, this is the test of Krishna consciousness, that one cannot be envious of another devotee's service to Krishna. But Radharani herself is the highest emblem of devotional service, because she is herself Krishna's internal pleasure potency. And in fact, the gopis are expansions of Radharani. In order to please Krishna, Radharani herself can fulfill all the desires of Krishna But in order to increase and enhance Krishna's pleasure, she expands her potency as all the internal, all the gopis in Vrindavan. And it's described that all the jivas who come to the platform of gopis who were joining Krishna's pastimes for the first time, coming from whatever universe they were in, to come and get trained up actually by appearing in Vrindavan, in the place where Krishna was performing his pastimes, in the particular universe where Krishna's pastimes were being performed, at that place they were actually taking up the training as being gopis for the first time, or as cowherd boys, or whatever. This is the principle of devotional service, that when we actually become ready to perform devotional service, then immediately we're transported to the particular universe where Krishna's pastimes are going on. And there we get our first opportunity to meet with Krishna and get trained up in devotional service to Krishna. And these gopis who were meeting Krishna for the first time, getting trained up for the first time, they became, by their devotional service, on the same platform as those who were the eternal associates of Krishna, who had actually descended to take part in Krishna's pastimes. So they became practically on the same level as the eternal consorts of the Lord, who associate and come with him to perform devotional service in this world. So all these activities are very wonderful, but Radharani herself, and the gopis, they are all considered the goddesses of fortune. And in fact, Lakshmi herself is an expansion of Radharani. So this is something people don't always appreciate. The fact that Narayan is an expansion of Krishna and that Lakshmi is an expansion of Radharani. But that is in a very much more regal setting, in a setting of awe and reverence, that Lakshmi and Narayan are being worshipped in this way. But the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are so far superior, because those pastimes are actually very intimate, loving dealings between the Lord and his pleasure potency. There's the original form of Krishna, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Radha Krishna. And just as Sita and Ram, they're also expansions of Radha and Krishna in this way. So the single emblem of devotional service is Radharani. And her specific quality is that she has so many qualities, but her specific quality and qualification is that, being the internal pleasure potency of Krishna, her only interest is in pleasing Krishna. And Krishna's, actually his only interest is in Srimati Radharani. But still, because of her devotional service, is so first class that she attracts Krishna. Therefore the devotees, they try to take shelter of Srimati Radharani, because if Radharani recommends someone to Krishna, then Krishna he accepts. So the devotees, they try to take shelter of Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is himself both Radha and Krishna combined. As we may have discussed on some occasions, that one, Krishna is one, but for the sake of pastimes he's become two. He's become Radha and Krishna. But actually Krishna himself, he is very much eager to taste the sweetness of Srimati Radharani's love and understand her qualities. How it is that he becomes so attracted by Radharani. And he also, because he's the supreme enjoyer, he wants to taste the sweetness of Radharani's love for him, because he knows that Radharani, she's experiencing pleasure by serving Krishna 10 million times more than he is by being served by Radharani. So because he's the supreme pleasure seeker, he also wants to taste that which Radharani is tasting. But the only way he can actually do that is by taking on the mood and the emotions of Srimati Radharani. So these are the internal reasons why this one, he has become two, but again these two have become one, so that Krishna, he can actually taste the mood and the emotions of his topmost devotee, Srimati Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. According to the statements of Shastra, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is himself devotional service, Radha and Krishna combined. And in this way he tastes the sweetness of rendering loving service to Krishna. This is Lord Chaitanya's mood. And at the same time, simultaneously, it's a good time to propagate the Yuga Dharma, the religion for the age of Kali, by chanting the holy name. So Krishna comes personally and tastes the sweetness of chanting his own holy names and teaches by his own example to propagate devotional service, pure bhakti, to overflood the whole world with pure love of Krishna, from which Krishna bhakti naturally sprouts, from Krishna prema. So therefore Rupa Goswami, he has made this very nice statement, Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gaura Tushe Namaha. Srila Rupa Goswami has given this very beautiful verse. He explains, Namo, I offer my respectful obeisances, Mahavadanyaya, unto you, the most munificent incarnation of the Lord. Krishna Prema Pradayate. He's freely giving Krishna Prema, that which no other incarnation has ever given before. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Gaura Tushe Namaha. My dear Lord, you are known as Sri Krishna Chaitanya, but you yourself, you are Krishna himself. But in this way, you are freely distributing what even Krishna himself doesn't give very easily. This we're looking at attracting Krishna and the rareness of pure devotional service. Because that devotional service, as we've discussed, that Krishna himself becomes controlled by his devotee. So he doesn't give that opulence very easily to anyone. Why Krishna will give any of us the power to control him? It is very rare. What qualification we've got to control God? What, not even to see God or approach God, what to speak of control him, but he gives that to his pure devotees. And as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is thinking, actually this is described in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna is thinking, it has been a very long time since I awarded anyone pure devotional service. So now, let me take on this and manifest pastimes that will attract the whole world. And in this most merciful mood, he appears as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to freely give what no other incarnation ever has given before. It's pure love of Krishna. So this is Lord Chaitanya's merciful nature. He is giving. At the same time he is giving Krishna, he's giving the means by which Krishna himself becomes attracted. And at the same time he's inviting, come on, come on. This is Lord Chaitanya's most munificent nature. So this pure devotional service is Krishna's own internal potency, his own internal pleasure potency. It's the only means by which Krishna becomes attracted. That is Krishna bhakti. So our business is not to become just servants of God or even to become one with God. Prabhupada explained our business is to become greater than God, to attract Krishna, even to control Krishna by loving devotional service. So this, because Radharani, she is so strong. Krishna means the all-attractive person. Krishna is attracting everyone. But Radharani is so powerful that she attracts even Krishna. She is transcendentally stronger than Krishna. So in this way, we see in the Rathiyatra pastime that when Lord Chaitanya is dancing at the Rathka, there's a very nice description of this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. How Lord Chaitanya is dancing and he's in the mood of Radharani. He's Krishna, but he's in the mood of Radharani. And Jagannath, he's on the cart And Jagannath, he's in great ecstasy watching Lord Chaitanya's dancing. Beautiful, beautiful, blissful, ecstatic dancing with Krishna, pure Prem Sankirtan. All the devotees are dancing. This Sankirtan is Prem Sankirtan. Not just we go out and we chant Hare Krishna, but actually the devotees are manifesting pure love of Krishna in their dancing and blissful chanting. And Lord Chaitanya is showering everyone with nectar, and everyone is becoming amazed to see Lord Chaitanya's ecstatic dancing and love of Krishna. And sometimes he is dancing and Lord Jagannath, he stops the cart so that he can watch Lord Chaitanya dancing. And sometimes Lord Chaitanya is dancing by the side of the cart and Lord Jagannath's cart is going on. And sometimes in the mood of Srimati Radharani, he's dancing behind the cart. And he stops to see if Lord Jagannath has noticed. And Lord Jagannath, he also stops the cart. So, in this way, there is a transcendental competition between the personality of Godhead, Lord Jagannath, on the cart, the enjoyer, and the personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya, who's manifesting the mood and emotions of Srimati Radharani, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in this way, it's described that in the competition, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emerged victorious. So, this is the transcendental nature of Srimati Radharani and devotional service. So it is described here, but Radharani, Krishna is so attractive, he's called Madan Mohan, which means that he's so attractive that he can defeat the attraction of thousands of Cupids. So what does this mean? It means Cupid is very powerful. Everyone in this world is moving, all the creatures, whether man, woman, slugs, spiders, fishes, whatever they are, whenever they are shot by the formless form of Cupid with an arrow, then the sex attraction is there. It comes. And that is because Cupid's job is to attract and inspire attraction within this material world. And Cupid is considered himself most attractive. Yeah. And he has all his weapons, very powerful weapons. Although Lord Shiva did once burn him to ashes because he didn't burn him to ashes. Lord Shiva was so angry with him because he was coming and trying to disturb Lord Shiva's meditation by shooting Lord Shiva with his arrows, that Lord Shiva decided, and his third eye opened, and he just glared at Cupid, and he burned him not to ashes, but to nothingness, actually. So he doesn't actually have a form, but we can understand that Cupid's arrows are there, just like, you see, what is that? Cupid's arrows are there in the form of a beautiful face or the curve of the eyebrows. You see that the man, the woman, they become attracted by each other. This is Cupid's power of attraction. But if there is no attraction, if there is no sex attraction, that is because Cupid is not giving the facility to become attracted in that way. So, but Cupid himself is so attractive. But Krishna is called Madan Mohan, which means that he is so attractive that he can defeat the attraction of thousands of Cupids. That is Krishna's attractive quality. That Cupid, he inspires everyone to become attracted by the features of this world. But Krishna is so attractive that he can defeat the attractive nature of thousands of Cupids. My apologies. It's me here. Sorry. Whatever it was, it's me. So the principle is that... just one moment. Back to Will, Hare Krishna. Sorry, Prabhuji. My apologies. We're just in Nectar of Devotion class. Is everything all right? Saturday. Yeah, in the evening. I still have the key, but please get. Is that okay? I'm so sorry about that. Oh. On Saturday, okay. Saturday, probably around 8 or 9, something like that. No problem, Prabhu. It's my fault. I should have made arrangements for you. I should have actually given back the key. My sincere apologies, Prabhu. But Cameron should give you back his key, of course. Okay, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. My apologies on that. Sorry, that was foolish of me. Okay. So anyway, but Radharani is still more attractive, because she can attract even Krishna. So this is the nature of things. That she is devotional service personified. And Prabhupada makes this point that therefore devotees call her Madan Mohan, Mohani or Mohini, the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. She is very powerful. She controls even Krishna. So this principle of it not being an activity in the material world, in Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? Krishna says, Daivi hi esha gunamayi. What is that? No, what is the verse? Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritim ashrita. So the meaning is very good. You can explain the meaning?
Those are great souls that shelter of this my divine nature.
Yes. Those who are actually great souls, they are under the protection of the divine nature. They're not on, everyone in this material world is trying to take shelter of Maya. But taking shelter of Maya's feet is very difficult because she kicks. And she kicks. It is not a very pleasing experience to take shelter of Maya, Krishna's illusory energy in this world. We're thinking if we take shelter of Maya, we will be happy in this world. But the more we try to take shelter of Maya, the more we become kicked and suffer in this material world. But the devotees, they take shelter of Srimati Radharani. And they're not under Maya's clutches. They're under the protection of Srimati Radharani. So this is the nature of devotional service, that they don't have to become afflicted or affected, or attracted by Maya's powerful, very powerful potency, because Maya is so powerful that she's got everyone in her clutches. Every living entity is in her clutches. Doesn't matter what species of life you're in, everyone suffers and is victimized by this sex attraction, ultimately. Attraction for so many things, culminating in sex attraction. That's the fact. But someone who has taken shelter of Krishna actually is no longer victimized by Maya. And the first class example is Haridas Thakur. You know Haridas Thakur? The Namacharya, he was born in a Muslim family. He was actually known as Brahma Haridas, the incarnation of Lord Brahma. But in this birth, because he prayed to Lord Chaitanya, because after the pastime where Brahma had stolen the cowherd boys and the calves, you remember that pastime? Then what happened was Lord Brahma, he came and offered prayers to Krishna and kept circumambulating and bowing down and falling at Krishna's feet and saying, "Are you not Narayan, my father?" And Krishna is standing there, little boy with his lump of fruit salad and yogurt and rice in the palm of his left hand, which could be clearly seen through the petal-like fingers of his hand. And he's looking up at Brahma and saying, "Brahma, I'm just a cowherd boy. How can I be your father?" Yeah. And Brahma is completely bewildered. He's just seeing this incredible manifestation of Krishna's potency, where all the calves and cowherd boys have all assumed Vishnu forms. And they're all being worshipped by thousands and thousands of demigods. And they're so beautiful, beautifully decorated. And it's just too much for Brahma to appreciate. He just can't handle it because his own mystic potency is just like, he's thinking his own mystic power is very great, but he's realizing that my mystic potency is just like holding up a candle to the sun. What is the use of holding up a candle to the sun? You know, totally pointless. And so he becomes completely bewildered, and so Krishna very kindly draws his curtain of yoga maya, because otherwise Brahma can't even stand up straight. He's got all mystic powers within the universe, but he just can't handle it because Krishna is so extraordinary. So he goes to Navadvip, knowing that later Lord Chaitanya will appear in the age of Kali. So he falls down and offers so nice prayers. After Krishna is finally told, when Brahma has finally realized after all these beautiful, beautiful prayers in chapter 14 in the Krishna book, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, and he realizes, actually, I'm just in the way. Krishna's performing his pastimes and I'm just in the way. So he asks Krishna for permission to go, and Krishna, go. So he goes. But then he goes to Navadvip and he prays to Lord Chaitanya and prays for the Lord, for his mercy. And Lord Chaitanya actually appears before Lord Brahma at that time and says to Brahma, "My dear Brahmaji, what can I do for you? What is the situation?" Brahma is very, very happy to see Lord Chaitanya, and he falls at his feet and prays that, "My dear Lord, please give me a benediction. I made a very great mistake this time. But in the next incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, please, I beg of you that I will not make that same foolish mistake. I will not become proud and try to test you. And that this time I can perform some pleasing service for you." So Lord Chaitanya agrees. He says, "All right, so be it. This time you shall be born in a family of meat eaters. And you will be you will assist me by being the acharya of chanting the holy name, of my holy names. And in this way you will be known as Brahma Haridas," actually. So Brahma, he's very pleased to have got this benediction to be born in a family of meat eaters. No cause to be proud, nothing to be proud about. And you see from the activities displayed by Haridas Thakur in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that he's blessed with all good qualities. All good qualities. And he is completely humble. He doesn't even want to go near the temple of Jagannath Puri, of Lord Jagannath in Puri, because he's concerned that somehow or other some of the priests serving Lord Jagannath might inadvertently touch his body when passing on the road or wherever, and he's feeling that in that way they will become contaminated just by touching him. So his humility is completely extraordinary, and Lord Chaitanya personally makes a place for Haridas to stay in the gardens of Jagannath Puri, where he can actually see the chakra on top of the temple. And he tells Haridas that seeing this chakra is just the same as seeing Lord Jagannath. So please stay here. And Lord Chaitanya would personally come and bring Lord Jagannath's remnants of prasadam to feed Haridas every day. And we know the story of the disappearance of Haridas Thakur, where Lord Chaitanya personally danced with Haridas's body in his arms and performed ecstatic kirtan. And then he personally performed the ceremony for burying Haridas's body on the beach at Jagannath Puri. And he declared that this place has now become a place of pilgrimage. So it's a very wonderful place. And that the tomb of Haridas Thakur, which is there in Puri, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is inscribed on the tomb in English. Right? This is going back long, long time, but he's inscribed on the tomb in English. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavs die, for thou art living still in sound. For Vaishnavs die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around. So this was Thakur Haridas. He was Namacharya. We say in the Premadwani prayer, second item, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, actually. And the principle is such that Acharya means he knows the purport of what is in the Shastras. He explains to others what is there in the Shastras. He teaches what that purport of what is in the Shastras. And he himself is the living example of what is there in the Shastras. So Thakur Haridas, he was addressed by Lord Chaitanya, that some people, they speak very nicely, but do not behave so nicely. And some people behave very nicely, but do not preach. But you, my dear Haridas, are the first class Vaishnava, because your behavior is first class, and you preach first class devotional service. So therefore he is Namacharya. He was actually the Acharya of chanting the holy name. And he was himself chanting daily over 192 rounds every day. Just completely absorbed. So the point was that Haridas Thakur, once he was tempted by this most amazing prostitute who came and was performing poses and everything to attract Haridas Thakur's mind. This prostitute was hired by one Muslim leader who was very envious of Haridas and wanted evidence that he was just an ordinary living being and fallen down so that he could punish him. But Haridas actually converted the prostitute into Vaishnavism. She became a great Vaishnava. And not only that, but Maya Devi herself came and personally tested Haridas Thakur. But Haridas Thakur, he was begged by Maya Devi herself that, please, you are so strong in your devotional service, please initiate me into the chanting of the holy names. So Maya Devi herself was initiated by Haridas Thakur into the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So Haridas Thakur is a very wonderful acharya. So this principle, that one who has actually taken shelter of Krishna, he is no longer attracted by Maya. Actually, Maya herself, she gives up her control over that living entity. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita, that the great souls who are yogis in devotion, they're under the protection of the divine energy. They're under the protection of Radharani. Maya cannot touch. So this is some of the purport of this. So being directly under the control of the internal potency of Krishna, devotional service attracts even Krishna himself. So the pure devotees, because they're under the shelter of Radharani, under the protection of devotional service, in this way, Krishna himself becomes attracted by the pure devotees. And this section is called Attracting Krishna, and so here we're discussing about how Krishna himself becomes attracted by bhakti. Any questions or comments? Is it okay? Okay. Some questions. Okay. Mary, your turn first.
You know they say that the like you're saying that the only way of going back to Godhead or, you know, getting over it right now is by chanting the Maha Mantra. What did people do before Mahaprabhu was around? What did they get to chant anything, or
you find that people try perform devotional service? under the guidance of the Acharyas. There are four bona fide sampradayas, the Sri Sampradaya, which the predominating teacher of the age of Kali has been Ramanujacharya, and you find the Rudra Sampradaya, and there is the Kumara Sampradaya, and there is the Madhava Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya. Now, what happens is that people were following these sampradayas, and they could be liberated, even go to Vaikuntha, by following the instructions of the bona fide acharyas. But actually, to go beyond Vaikuntha, to go to the topmost spiritual planet in the spiritual world, to be able to attract Krishna himself, the attention of Krishna himself, this requires prema bhakti. So up until that time, that pathway, actually until Madhavendra Puri appeared, the grand preceptor of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, ecstatic love of Krishna was not manifest within any of the sampradayas. Not even in the Brahma Madhava Sampradaya. But Madhavendra Puri, Prabhupada, he exhibited this pure love of Krishna. And his disciple, Ishvara Puri, he also was able to develop this ecstatic love of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya, he took Ishvara Puri as his spiritual master. Because whenever the Lord appears, he always takes a spiritual master himself. You know, Krishna, he had his spiritual master. Actually, two spiritual masters. He had his initiating spiritual master, who was
Gargamuni,
yes, Gargacharya. And he had his instructing spiritual master, who was
Sandipani
Muni, yes. So Krishna, he always takes a guru, because this is the way Krishna says that yadyadat shruti shrestas. One has to, a great personality, all the world follows in his footsteps. So he said, if I didn't work, then all the world will be put to ruination. So the facility was there for liberation and to go to Vaikuntha, but the facility to know about Krishna and to develop love for Krishna was not manifested in this world until the time of Madhavendra Puri. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he not only manifested, but he freely distributed it to everyone, all and sundry. So, does that answer your question? It may leave you with so many other questions, that's all right. But the fact is that these four bona fide sampradayas are there in the human society since a very long time. But we're in the line of the Brahma Sampradaya, following in the line of Madhavacharya. But this line is called the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya, indicating the lineage by which Krishna consciousness is being received. And the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, those following in the line of Lord Chaitanya, they're able to understand what is there, the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you see this as a fact, that the other sampradayas, they would not accept the credibility of this Brahma Sampradaya until Madhavacharya, he presented a commentary, because the bona fide acharyas, they all have their own commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So the Vedas are there, the Vedanta Sutra is the considered the Siddhanta, it is the Siddhanta, it is the Anta. Anta means the end. It is the ultimate end of knowledge. And the different sampradayas, they have their own take on and their own commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra. But The Gaudiya Sampradaya, the Madhava Sampradaya, their conclusion is that why do you need to look elsewhere when Vyasadeva himself has given his own commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. And you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam that it is described in the history of the Bhagavatam itself, how that Srimad Bhagavatam came to be written. And Narada Muni, who is the spiritual master of Vyasadeva, he told Vyasadeva that yes, you can see my dear Vyasadeva, because Vyasadeva had approached his Guru Maharaj. He'd approached Narada Muni. Why is it that I'm feeling incomplete, even though I've compiled all the Vedas, I've compiled all the Puranas, all the Itihasas, the histories, and all the supplementary literatures. I've even compiled the Mahabharata, so even Sri Sudra Dvija Bandhu Nam, all the non-Brahmins, can easily understand the conclusion of the Vedas by reading these stories. And I've compiled the Vedanta Sutra, which is the very technical and specific statement to summarize all the teachings of the Vedas, these sutras, these short pithy statements, these sutras, short little mantras like Atato Brahma Jigyasa Janma Adyasi Yataha. This is where the Vedanta Sutra begins. Atato Brahma Jigyasa means, this is the first aphorism, the first sutra, that now in the human form of life, it's time to inquire about the absolute truth. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Jigyasa means inquiries. So like that. And then the second line, Janmad Yasiyataha. What is that absolute truth? The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. So these are the sutras, the Vedanta sutras. But even after having undertaken this great, great work of having divided the one Veda into four, and having created the Mahabharata, which is something like 100,000 verses or some outrageously huge, phenomenal poem, in perfect Sanskrit, and perfectly describing in historical format the conclusion of all the Vedas, still people couldn't get it, and still Vyasadeva himself was feeling incomplete. He's still feeling that I don't feel satisfied in myself. And he asked Narada Muni, why is this that I'm feeling like that? He said, could it be that in all this I have failed to specifically point out the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is dear both to the Lord and all the living beings? So Narada Muni confirms, yes, this is actually the fact. You've spotted it yourself. So now, my dear Prabhu, Narada Muni addresses Vyasadeva. He addresses even his disciple, my dear Prabhu. Prabhupada, he would also address the devotees, Prabhu, because the devotee thinks of each other as Prabhu, Master. So he's saying, my dear Prabhu, please therefore compile Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, meditate on the pastimes of the Lord in your complete ability, and then delineate these pastimes by writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam, according to the author himself, the same author of all the Vedas, has declared that this is Sharam Sharam, the cream of the cream of all Vedic literature. And it is Galitam Palam, the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. You know, if you've got a tree, the tree is very nice, but the real thing is when the tree grows and you get the ripened fruit from the tree, then the tree really fulfills its purpose. It's, you know, you get some shade and you get so many things from the tree, but the real thing, the ripened fruit of the tree. So this is declared, Nigama Kalpataro Galitam Palam Sukamukadam Ritadrava Samyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Mahora Hora Sikabhuvi Bhavuka. Know, O thoughtful men, that this Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami, and therefore this Srimad Bhagavatam, which is semi-solid and soft, Amrita Drava, means semi-solid and soft, is the ripened fruit and is all the more relishable even by the liberated souls. That even those who are liberated from all clutches of material existence can relish Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit, according to the author of the Vedas himself. It is the natural commentary, therefore, on Vedic knowledge, and it specifically delineates devotional service to the Supreme Lord by the devotees. It specifically points out the qualities, the name, the fame, the form, the characteristics, and the qualities of the Lord and his devotees. Therefore, it is extremely dear to the devotees because it delineates everything. And it is very, very sublime and is the complete perfection of life. So, anyway, the point was that the different acharyas, they have their, in the different sampradayas, disciplic lines of disciplic succession, they have their own conclusions. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took two essential points from each of the four sampradayas and synthesized them. He took the very best of the best of the best and synthesized them all into Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he presented the ultimate conclusion, which is pure love of God. Actually, so Lord Chaitanya himself is the synthesis of these four fully established, fully authorized disciplic successions and delivers himself what is simply unavailable without Krishna Bhakti. Up until that time, people could not appreciate who is Krishna. They're worshipping Lakshmi Narayan in Vaikuntha, but they could not appreciate Krishna and the ecstatic nature of pure love of God until the appearance of Madhavendra Puripada. So anyway, this, I hope, will give you some more insight, but it may raise some more questions. But that is all right. There should be questions. Let us just check what questions you've got now, Meera, on this point. Okay. Ask me, Prabhu.
My question is slightly on a different line.
Okay.
You know when we chant the Maha Mantra?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
this one up here.
When you say Hare Krishna,
yeah,
does the Hare refer to Radha?
Yes.
And when you say Hare Ram, is the Hare Sita?
No. What other you can take Ram. Either way, you can take Rama being the name Balaram, or you can take the name of Lord Ramachandra. It doesn't matter. It's the same person. It's the personality of Godhead. But actually, the meaning is that my dear Lord, all-attractive Lord, my dear energy of the Lord, which helps us to reach you, my dear Ram, the source of all pleasure, this is the meaning of Ram, the source of all pleasure, please engage me in your loving devotional service. This is the meaning of the Maha Mantra. Srila Prabhupada has explained it to us. It means, please engage me in your loving service. Hare is Radha. Krishna is Krishna. Rama means the source of all pleasure. Whether you take it to be Rama, as in Sita Ram, or Balarama, it is all fine. But understand the meaning is to be engaged by the Lord in his loving service. Is that okay?
Yeah, because I was thinking, when you chant, what should you be thinking? Like, should you be visualizing something? Should you be meditating on something?
Yeah. Prabhupada explained the best thing is just try to hear the sound vibration. That is called attentive chanting. Know that the sound vibration is Krishna himself. Try to be attentive to the sound vibration. That is the best thing, Prabhupada explained.
So you don't have to try to visualize anything. Just listen to the sound.
Just try to hear the sound vibration attentively. Because inattentive chanting is the basis for offenses in our chanting. So attentiveness to that sound vibration is very significantly important to advance, become advanced in the chanting, become attracted to Krishna. Just like someone comes, your guest comes to see you. If the king comes to see you and you ignore whatever sounds may come, or you ignore his presence, you're not going to make much of an impact with the king. But if you're very attentive to the king, if he comes to your place, then that will be very good. So what is happening is Krishna, he is dancing on the tongue of the devotee. He's dancing on our tongues. And we're not paying attention. So attentive chanting is required in order to make progress in devotional service. Attentive hearing and chanting. Not falling asleep. Snorananda. Is that okay?
So you can't go for a walk and chant?
You can, but just attentively learn to focus on the sound vibration. Yes, you can walk, not a problem. You can dance. You can walk, you can dance, you can clap, you can play musical instruments and be very attentive to the sound vibration of Krishna. These things are meant to attract the attention, but they're not meant to drown out the sound vibration. They're meant to complement so that we focus on the sound vibration. Just like the madanga, we don't play it too loud, or the kartals too loud that you can't hear the kirtan. But the japa should be chanted in such a way so that you can hear yourself and others can also hear you chant. This is required. Any other question or comment is there? One more?
You know, when Krishna was, he said, when he played the flute,
yes,
and all the gopis left everything and went to,
yes,
him. Isn't that being neglectful of the duties?
No.
Is that good or bad?
Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that he congratulates them. He says, my dear gopis, actually you have achieved the complete perfection of life. Because this is actually Krishna's order in Bhagavad Gita. Mame kam sharanam. You surrender to me alone. Just like Krishna when he was being fed by Mother Yasoda, and she put him down to go and turn off the milk. Krishna became very angry. No, your first business is to feed me. You know, our real business is to surrender to Krishna. So anyway, yes. Like that. Mame kam sharanam vraja. This is the topmost duty. Vedaischa sarve aham eva vedyo. By all the Vedas, all your duties, I am what is to be known. The verse in the Bhagavatam is there. Vasudeva para veda, vasudeva paro dharmo, vasudeva para yogi. This yoga practice is meant for realizing Krishna. Your dharmic activities are meant for realizing Krishna. All the Vedas are meant for realizing Krishna. And you realize Krishna, you've come to the proper conclusion. And Krishna says, sarva dharma parityaja. Just give it up, all your dharmas, and just surrender to me. This is Krishna's instruction. So he congratulated the gopis that actually you have achieved the topmost perfection of life by becoming exclusively attracted to me. They didn't care for what their husband said, for what their son said, for what their parents said. They just wanted to go to Krishna out of their apparent lusty desire. But that lusty desire was not for their personal sense gratification. It was to please and satisfy Krishna. That was their desire. So this is the difference between lust and love. Lust means I want to satisfy my desire. And love means I want to satisfy Krishna's desire. But although it may appear to be the same, actually the quality was completely different, because their interest was to satisfy the desires of Krishna. So this is the difference. So this science has to be carefully understood. And if we read this these chapters in the Krishna book about the rasa dance, this is so beautifully explained by Srila Prabhupada. Is that okay, Prabhupada? Okay, so I think we should come to a pause for now. And it looks as though Ashok Prabhu will be able to hit the rewind button because he's recorded this. You've recorded also?
No.
No, okay. Anyway, let's see what we can do for developing this more next time and have a little kirtan. So thank you very much indeed. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Nectar of Devotion ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi.